We recognize the difficult situation Indonesia currently finds itself in with a surge of COVID cases.
Sharing COVID vaccines with the world. It's Monday, July 12th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're online. Find us at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, Australia struggles with COVID, Pakistan's travel trouble, Olympics compete against COVID, Afghan women face uncertainty, history for a Pakistani judge. It's all on today's VOA Asia. The Biden administration is sending 3 million doses of the Moderna coronavirus vaccine to Indonesia as the archipelago deals with a surge in COVID-19 cases. The Indonesian government said it will use the doses as booster shots for health workers who have already been fully vaccinated with the Chinese Sinovac vaccine. White House correspondent Patsy Whitaker Suara has this report.
As Indonesia battles a record-breaking surge in new COVID-19 cases and deaths due to the highly contagious Delta variant, on Friday the government confirmed a shipment of 3 million doses of Moderna vaccines shared by the Biden administration.
This will be the first shipment, and there will be the second shipment as well from the U.S. And this is part of doses sharing mechanism through COVAX facility by the U.S.
A White House official told VOA the shipment is one of the largest batches the U.S. has donated. The U.S. has allocated 4 million doses for Indonesia, with the remaining 1 million doses to be shipped soon.
In addition to the vaccines we're also sending, we're moving forward on plans to increase assistance for Indonesia's broader COVID-19 response efforts. We recognize the difficult situation Indonesia currently finds itself in with a surge of COVID cases, and our thoughts are with those in Indonesia who are affected.
Only about 5% of Indonesia's population is fully vaccinated. Jakarta relies heavily on Chinese vaccines and has procured more than 108 million doses of Sinovac. After several medical personnel already fully inoculated with the Sinovac vaccine died of COVID-19, the government said it would use the Moderna vaccines as booster shots for its 1.5 million health workers.
The third jab will only be given to health workers because health workers are the ones who are exposed to high levels of virus every day.
The U.S. has committed to donate 580 million doses worldwide, part of the 1 billion doses pledged by G7 countries. So far, 80 million doses have been allocated and about 50 million have been shipped. Analysts say wealthy nations must share doses at a larger and faster scale.
And we know that in places like Southeast Asia, Sub-Saharan Africa, parts of Latin America, that the need is great, that we're seeing people dying unnecessarily while the vaccines are sitting in freezers and shelves. So we have to really think about a mobilization SWAT team or equivalent that's able to get vaccines out and make sure that the countries have capacity to use them.
Responding to VOA about plans to donate more doses, the White House press secretary said the United States is already the largest contributor.
The president has made clear that that we will continue to build from here, and we're working on manufacturing capacity around the world and in the United States, and we will continue to contribute even beyond the billion doses.
On Thursday, the administration said it is also sending to Moldova 500,000 doses of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, the first batch of U.S. vaccine shared with Europe. In addition, 1.5 million J&J doses will be sent to Nepal and 500,000 Moderna doses to Bhutan. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News.
You can read and see much more on this story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia, on Facebook at VOA Asia, and at our website, voanews.com. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. China calls additions to U.S. economic blacklist unreasonable suppression. Head of aid group reports increased attacks by Myanmar military in border areas. China's crackdown on pricey tutoring schools upset parents. Australia says last troop withdrawn from Afghanistan. It's game on for Olympics despite COVID surge and lockdown. Expanded coverage of all these stories and so much more can be found daily at Facebook at VOA Asia. Also stop by our website, voanews.com. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Let's continue with VOA Asia. Coronavirus infections are rising in Australia, despite a two-week-old lockdown intended to stop their spread. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports officials are now focusing on how to enforce compliance with COVID-19 lockdown rules, especially where such restrictions appear to be mostly ignored.
Millions of people in Sydney and surrounding regions were ordered into a COVID-19 lockdown 2 weeks ago. Detected cases of the highly contagious Delta variant have continued to rise, though. Authorities have said that strict stay-at-home orders in some of Australia's most ethnically diverse areas in Sydney have been widely flouted, although charities have said community health messages for some migrant groups have been inadequate. A major police operation is underway in parts of Sydney to ensure the rules are followed. Officers on horseback are expected to patrol main shopping areas. Senior commanders have denied the crackdown is targeting multicultural areas. Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison says too many people have broken the rules.
We haven't seen the compliance that has been necessary. It's important to get that compliance in place. The virus doesn't move on its own. It moves by people moving the virus around. And that's why it's so important that the restrictions that have been put in place that are appropriate just need to be complied with.
Under Sydney's lockdown, which is due to end on July 16, residents can only leave home to work, study, buy groceries, care for a relative or other dependent, or receive a COVID-19 vaccination. Starting Friday, people will only be able to exercise in groups of two and do so within 10 kilometres of their homes. The New South Wales Chief Health Officer, Dr. Kerry Chant, is urging residents to stay home.
People are looking at countries overseas where they're seeing people go about their work and pleasure in a sort of semi-normal way. And I think that is really important to highlight. That's because those countries have got vaccination coverages for their adult population and in some cases down in the childhood population. That is very different from our situation. We have only got 9% vaccination coverage.
Health officials have estimated there are 513 active coronavirus infections in Australia. 92 patients are in the hospital. New South Wales, including the state capital Sydney, recorded another 44 new infections Friday. Australia has recorded almost 31,000 COVID-19 cases and 910 deaths since the pandemic began. Its international borders remain closed to most foreign nationals. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Happening now in Asia, China's Ministry of Commerce says it resolutely opposes the addition of 23 Chinese entities to a U.S. economic blacklist over issues including alleged human rights abuses and military ties. The U.S. Department of Commerce said Friday it had added 14 companies and other entities to its economic blacklist. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. This is VOA Asia. It's great to have you with us today. As the number of vaccinations around the world increases and countries open up for travel, a new problem has arisen. Many, especially in the developing world, are stuck with vaccines not approved in North America, Europe, or even some Middle Eastern countries. That is impacting not just recreational travel, but people's livelihoods. VOA's Aisha Tanzim tells us more from Pakistan.
Pakistan received its first COVID vaccines from China and Russia after multiple waves of the virus had already struck the nation. At the government's urging, many people took their shots. But now, Pakistanis are finding that some of the vaccines given in Pakistan are not yet approved in many other countries. About 9 million Pakistanis live and work in other countries. Many are now rushing to get more widely approved vaccines like AstraZeneca, Pfizer, and Moderna. But these vaccines only recently arrived in Pakistan and in limited numbers.
Only 300 vaccines were delivered to my area, Mardan. The vaccines were gone in minutes, so I traveled to Islamabad because my visa is about to expire.
Nearly half of Pakistanis who work and live abroad do so in Middle East countries, mostly in United Arab Emirates and Saudi Arabia. These two countries have only approved certain vaccines. Many laborers who returned to Pakistan for a break are now finding it difficult to re-enter the countries where they work. In a desperate attempt to keep their jobs, some are willing to take multiple vaccines despite the limited medical data on the safety of mixing the shots.
Multiple times when people come in, we do face that they have gotten a vaccine, some other vaccine before, because most of the vaccines required for travel abroad were not here. But now since they come back to us and they ask us to, like, you know, vaccinate them again, that's one of the major problems that we face.
In early July, Pakistan received 2.5 million doses of Moderna through the COVAX initiative, meant to ease the burden for mid- and low-income countries.
People who need to travel internationally are coming from across the country in search of vaccination centers like this one in capital Islamabad. It offers a variety, and people are hoping they can find the one vaccine that's accepted in their destination of choice. Aisha Tanzeem, VOA News, Islamabad.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see with links to easily find them. VOA Asia Twitter, we're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia, the leaders of North Korea and China traded messages vowing to strengthen cooperation on the anniversary of their Treaty of Friendship, cooperation, and mutual assistance between the two countries. China has been North Korea's only major ally since the two signed the treaty in 1961. You'll find this and all the big stories through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As we continue with VOA Asia, apparently so do the Olympics. Japanese Prime Minister Yoshihide Suga announced last week that the Olympic Games would continue under a coronavirus state of emergency that bans spectators from all Tokyo-based venues. The arenas and surrounding areas will also be inaccessible to fans. I have been saying that we might have no spectators if the state of emergency was issued. Under such a situation, the decision on the spectators will be made at the five-party meeting, including the organizing committee, Tokyo Metropolitan Government, and the IOC. The Olympics run from July 23rd to August 8th, and the capital's state of emergency is scheduled for July 23rd through August 22nd, lifting before the Paralympic Games open on August 24th. Once again, Yoshihide Suga. We can hold the Olympics because of Japan. Such comments, as well as wishes for holding successful games, were written in a statement issued by the G7. In that sense, I would like to hold the games in order to meet such expectations. The ban, however, deals a significant blow to Olympic organizers expecting $800 million in ticket sales, and to the Japanese government, which spent $15.4 billion to host the Games. Olympic officials have barred spectators from the Games amid spiking coronavirus cases in Japan. Organizers have long said they will push forward with the Olympics, but experts say the highly transmissible Delta variant could give them pause. We hear more from VOA's Arash Arabasadi.
The Tokyo Olympic torch relay, without spectators and no running on public streets, precedes these Olympic Games, which will go ahead without any spectators either. Eric Feigl-Ding is an epidemiologist and senior fellow at the Federation of American Scientists. He tells VOA the latest coronavirus mutation may as well share the Olympic slogan.
This virus, the Delta variant specifically, is the greatest threat that we have faced during this pandemic. It is faster, stronger, fitter in every way. The Olympic motto, Altius Citius Fortius, really applies to the Delta variant.
The International Olympic Committee's website says the Latin phrase means faster, higher, stronger, and the words encourage athletes to give their best. In the case of the coronavirus, the words translate to some of the highest case numbers Japan has seen in months. IOC President Thomas Bach says an absence of spectators changes the meaning of the games.
We all regret this decision for not having spectators, for the spectators, but even more so for the athletes, who will not be able to enjoy life, the Olympic atmosphere. But for the athletes, I think the feeling will be very different, because they will know that billions of people from around the globe are with them in their heart, that they are supporting them, that they are feeling with them.
And while Bach says athletes will share special moments with TV audiences, Feigl Ding says they should share safe practices during and after the Olympics.
I would tell the Olympic organizers that it's incumbent on them that the games are not just a celebration of bringing people together in the name of sport, but also bringing people together safely and protecting the world.
Tokyo is under a state of emergency that will last throughout the Olympic Games. The opening ceremony is July 23rd. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Washington.
Making headlines in Asia, China's market regulator on Saturday blocked the merger of Tencent-backed game streaming platforms Douyu and Huya following an anti-monopoly investigation as authorities ramp up scrutiny of some of the country's biggest technology companies. The platforms are two of the largest companies of their kind in China. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, U.S. President Joe Biden announced last week the U.S. mission in Afghanistan will end August 31st. But concerns remain about the plight of Afghan civilians, especially women, as the Taliban continues to gain ground against Afghan forces. VOA senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports.
With the end of the 20-year mission in Afghanistan weeks away, the spotlight turns to the fate of women and girls. The Taliban now claims they control 85% of the country, and humanitarian concerns are mounting. President Joe Biden says he has given assurances to Afghan President Ashraf Ghani.
In our meeting, I also assured Ghani that U.S. support for the people of Afghanistan will endure. We will continue to provide civilian and humanitarian assistance, including speaking out for the rights of women and girls.
Experts agree the Taliban are not meeting the conditions they agreed to in the U.S.-Taliban peace deal. Milan Verveer, the former first U.S. ambassador for global women's issues, spoke to VOA.
They have not seized the violence. They have continued to engage, they and their militant networks. Horrible assassinations. We've been greatly concerned about what's happening to leaders in civil society, what's happened to women journalists, women judges, the girls' school bombing, just horrible, horrible atrocities that we are witnessing with great, great concern.
One of the 100 or so districts the Taliban have captured in recent weeks is Balkh in northern Afghanistan. Local residents say the Taliban have imposed repressive new rules in the district, ordering women to cover their heads and men to grow beards. Some districts are reporting girls' schools are being closed. Democratic Representative Seth Moulton says he has spent time in Afghanistan and is worried for the people he met, especially the women and girls.
I mean, it just breaks your heart to think about the Taliban taking over parts of the country and condemning women to essentially a life of servitude. And none of us want to see that happen. The president made it clear that ultimately this is up to the Afghan people and the Afghan government. But I certainly hope that we do whatever we can to support women and girls in Afghanistan and all the progress that they've been able to make with America in the last 20 years.
Afghan forces are vowing to fight to win back control of some of the districts recently taken over by the Taliban as their American and NATO counterparts depart. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
Zahid Qureshi, a Pakistani-American Muslim, has made history by becoming the first Muslim federal judge in the United States. After being nominated to the U.S. District Court of New Jersey by President Joe Biden, Judge Qureshi's nomination was approved by the U.S. Senate in June. VOA's Anshuman Apte reports.
President Joe Biden promised to bring more diversity to his administration, including in the judiciary branch. And so the Senate confirmation of Zahid Qureshi as America's first Muslim federal judge was celebrated by many Pakistani Americans.
It's very good news, news that gives us hope. Due to this, Pakistani Americans and other Muslims will feel more confident.
It's the light on the other side of the tunnel, jo hamare jo aage bache, you know.
It's the light at the end of the tunnel. With this, our kids will realize that in America, they have an equal opportunity and there is no discrimination.
U.S. federal district courts form the first layer of the federal judicial system. These courts deal with lawsuits involving the Constitution, federal statutes, and treaties. Zahid Qureshi will join the U.S. District Court of New Jersey as a magistrate judge. He was born in New Jersey to parents who immigrated to the U.S. from Pakistan and got his law degree from Rutgers University. Along with private practice, Judge Qureshi also served as New Jersey's assistant U.S. attorney for 5 years. The American-Pakistani Public Affairs Committee is one of the organizations which advocated for his nomination.
Judge Zahid Qureshi.
You'll notice that Zahid Qureshi is so popular that all Senate Democrats and as many as 15 or 18 Republican senators voted for him. His service to the country and community is exemplary. We are proud of him.
Judge Qureshi joined the U.S. military after the September 11 attacks and served as a military prosecutor. He served in Iraq and also served in the Department of Homeland Security during the last phase of George W. Bush's administration. Some of his critics have questions about his work in those days.
We wanted the White House and the Senate Judiciary Committee to probe unanswered questions about Judge Qureshi's experience as a detention legal advisor in Iraq at a time when there was rampant prison abuse, and also his tenure at ICE in the last year of the Bush administration.
You know, Muslim Americans, you know, are really kind of many times just on the receiving end of bad policy, for lack of a better term, when it comes to, you know, the U.S. military and when it comes to immigration. And so he's coveted himself as being part of the U.S. military and being part of a system that prevents immigration. And so this is what scares a lot of Muslim Americans.
But American-Pakistani Public Affairs Committee Chairman Ijaz Ahmed says that despite these objections, Judge Qureshi's confirmation is a positive sign.
Whenever
we just want to ensure that our community is part of the decisions that are being made about our future. So when we have one of our own in that position, we get the confidence that we are represented.
VOA requested comment from Judge Qureshi's office, but the request was declined. Anshuman Apte, VOA News, New York.
That's our program for today. You've been listening to VOA Asia. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, find us on Instagram, and see us on YouTube. You can find our full-length 25-minute programs at voanews.com. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our team, Service Chief Diane Gao, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, Amy Hybels, and Chris Cascao. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day ahead. Be safe. Be well.